Hello and welcome to the first Josh Holiday Show podcast of the new year. The date is the 3rd of January, 2010. And as of now, the shows are available on iTunes, so it makes it really easy to download to whatever you're using. You can go and search there, Josh Holiday Show podcast. Use two L's when you do holiday. And you can also go to joshholiday.com. For all kinds of info about the show, and there's also a link to iTunes there. What are we going to talk about today? I got a bunch of stuff. I'm going to try and cram a lot of stuff into the show. Later in the show, I'm hoping to talk a little bit of Leafs, maybe how Phil Kessel is looking like a bit of a dud. Bob Cole, the hockey play-by-play guy, should have retired a few years back. The Pepsi cheer, the Pepsi Olympic cheer that they're trying to thrust down our throats is stupid. Tiger Woods and golfers are not athletes. We'll talk movies, and let's start with movies. Last week's show was the best movies of 2009. Sort of my top 10 list, though it wasn't in any particular order. I just threw them out there, and as a disclaimer, mentioned that I hadn't seen Precious or I hadn't seen Up in the Air yet. Well, between that podcast and this one, I have seen one of those movies. The movie I saw was called Up in the Air. It's with George Clooney. And initially, that might be a reason for you to say, oh, I don't know, George Clooney, you know, he's sort of a Hollywood softy when it comes to the acting world. But this movie is outstanding. Had I seen it before my top 10 of 2009, it would have made the list. It's a really, really good movie. While watching it, I had almost a giddy feeling, just sort of a bit of a, like a natural high while I was watching, because it was just so, so good. Ivan Reitman, his son, Jason, did Thank You for Not Smoking, which was sort of a movie that not a ton of people saw, but also a good movie. And of course, last year, Juno, and now this one. He co-wrote it and directs it. George Clooney is the big star, but a lot of the credit has to go to the supporting actors as well. It gets a lot out of people who you might not really recognize. They're not named celebrities in the supporting cast, and it's a really, really well done film. It's funny, it's insightful, and it's fairly timely as well. It deals a little bit with how different companies are being downsized and that type of thing. I would say it's an instant classic, and I went to Rotten Tomatoes to see how they viewed things, and they gave it 89%. So 89% positive reviews from Rotten Tomatoes. And then if you go to the top critics, which weeds out a lot of the lesser known critics and the people who just write on their blogs or whatever, 91% positive review. And I want to talk a little bit about movie ads. Not the ones on television or trailers in the theater so much, but more the newspaper ads for movies and the blurbs they choose to run. I was reminded of this because there's an ad for Alvin and the Chipmunks, the Squeakquel. No! And it had a review from some lady from the Family Magazine Association. I thought, why is she being used as a critic? Is she like a professional critic? No. And I used to always sort of marvel at the legendary one is Earl Dittman. He sort of been a mysterious creature for quite a few years through the early 2000s to the mid 2000s, as one of these guys who always gave a positive review no matter how shitty the movie was. And, he was sort of legendary because no one could track down the wireless magazine that he supposedly wrote for. Basically, I think he's a guy who went on a lot of movie junkets. Basically, these are trips paid for by the movie companies to bring in, quote, critics, unquote, to talk to the stars and to maybe review the movie. So he was on the good side, the VIP list for the movie companies for his positive reviews. More recently, the ones that I seem to notice a lot for crappy movies, good reviews, Jeffrey Lyons, who now apparently he has a son, Ben Lyons, who is equally guilty of giving positive reviews to horrible movies. Sean Edwards, Fox TV, that's another one that sticks out. Mark S. Allen. And I did some research. I was like, I got to look up some of these critics. And I came across efilmcritic.com. And they chronicle what they call the whores, the quote whores. So basically reviewers who write good reviews so they can get printed in the movie ads. And they give awards every year. They call it the Peter Travers Award because Peter Travers from Rolling Stone is a king of giving good reviews to shitty movies. And I have their list somewhere in my fistful of paper. I have their list. Oh, here it is. All right. This year's, so basically the year just ended, 2009. This year's winners, I'm just going to do the top four. Sean Edwards was the number four whore of the year for his criticism. 17 again, the Zac Efron movie, he calls wildly entertaining. Astro Boy, he called awesome, a total blast. 2012, the big budget End of Days movie, the most exciting film of the year. The Twilight Saga New Moon, he called the most romantic movie of the year. Number three, Jeffrey Lyons. He is still a power in the movie review community. Pink Panther 2, he said, it's better than the first one. Night at the Museum, Battle of the Smithsonian, the Ben Stiller museum movies. One of the best family films of the year. As engaging as the original and with one of the funniest screenplays of the year. A newcomer to the list is Stuart Alson. Stuart Alson. And here are some of his choice reviews. He reviews a lot of indie stuff. But let's say Carnivorous. Bone-chilling serpentine terror ensues in this classic that outdoes Anaconda series from the get-go. All right. Well, it wasn't hard to outdo the Anaconda series. Let's go to critic number one of the year. Pete Hammond takes the number one quote whore of the year on the Critic Watch at efilmcritic.com. Some of his reviews for It's Complicated, the Larry David... that's not the Larry David movie, is it? No. Anyway, It's Complicated, not a good movie. Smart, sophisticated, and hilarious. G-Force, hilarious, pure family fun. Action, laughs, and heart. 17 again, hilarious and heartwarming. The Proposal, Sandra Bullock, piece of celluloid turd. Riotously funny. The Proposal is without question the year's best comedy. Also riotously funny is Old Dogs, the Robin Williams movie. That was probably the worst movie of the year. It's Complicated. Movies don't get any funnier than this. Well, there you go. He takes the cake for this year. It is the Josh Holiday Show podcast. The Olympics are on the way, and there's been a lot of advertising related to the Olympics. Obviously, the Olympics has become a huge, not just recently, but over the years, has become a giant commercial operation. It's very much geared to corporations and various different industries making money through advertisements and sponsorships. And this time around, here in Canada, Pepsi had a contest and a poll. It was, let's come up with a new cheer for Canada. Brought to you by Pepsi. So they did the contest and the poll, and the winner of their contest for Canada's new cheer is A-O, Canada Go. Fuck that shit. The Olympics are fine, but we don't need to be told how to cheer, especially by a multinational soda pop company. How about the classic Canada, 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 Canada? Is that not good enough? Aren't cheers supposed to be spontaneous? Although I think what will turn out happening is this cheer won't be adopted and probably won't be heard out of the mouths of anyone but people who are paid by Pepsi. Canadians, I think, are too smart to use this manufactured cheer. All right. You know what? I'm going to play you a bit of comedy here. Something from one of my favorite comedians of all time. I saw him live in the early days, just in like a little club. I first saw him at Just for Laughs as sort of one of the young comics there, and then saw him at what used to be the Laugh Resort when it was still on Lombard Street in Toronto. If you're familiar with Toronto, you get that. But basically a fairly small comedy club, and he just tore it up. One of the funny stand-ups I know. And here's a clip from the one, the only, Louis C.K.
I don't know. I've started to kind of hate people, and it's not because I have anything against them. It's just I enjoy it. It's just recreation. Like, you know when you're at the bank and you got nothing to do while you're waiting in line, so you just pick people to hate while you're waiting. You just look at someone and form an opinion with no information. And it's never positive. Who fucking wastes their time? I bet he's a hard worker. Who thinks about that shit? Skip over those people. Then you find a guy, oh, look at his shoes. What a fucking asshole. Oh, look at that piece of shit. I hope he dies today. Oh, God, I hate him. I hate him. You watch all the shit. Yeah, fill it out, you fuckface. Fill it out. Yeah, you filled it out. I knew it. You suck. He's just standing there. He has no idea you're just boiling with hate, you know? I feel people hating me sometimes, you know? Like, I was at the post office, and I'm at the line, you know? It's one of those things where there's a long line and one window open. So everyone's just like, ah! Everyone's mad. But when you're in the line, you're in the hate group. You get to be part of the group, and you're all looking at each other going, like a silent movie of impatient people, you know? Then there's always one person who breaks the silence, somebody who has an idea, you know, like, they should open another window. And everybody's like, yeah, I know, I don't even know. I don't even know how to do it. Then there's always an old lady who has a story. I was here on Wednesday, and there was also a line like this. Holy shit, really? Oh my God, you fucking old lady. That's amazing. But anyway, then it's your turn at the window, right? And now everybody's looking at you and you feel the scrutiny of how quickly you're mailing your shit. You start realizing how unimportant your package is and you feel like they can tell. Yeah, fuck, get out of there. You don't need to mail that right now. And it's like, if you do one little extra thing, like, do you have those stamps that have Jackie Robinson behind you? You're like, Jesus. Fucking dude. They put their shit down heavily like, fuck, now this motherfucker's gonna make me stand here while he buys fucking stamps at the post office? Are you shitting me? Let's shit in his mouth right now, seriously. Let's you fucking hold him down and I will shit directly into his fucking time-wasting mouth.
That is Louis C.K. Funny man. Okay, I got to talk about this. This is I don't normally get into politics a ton. The weird thing is in the past few, I guess past eight and a half years, ever since George W. Bush came to power in the U.S., I've sort of followed U.S. politics more than I have Canadian politics. Though now, Canadian politics with Harper at the helm have become very much like U.S. politics. And Harper has become very much like George W. Bush. And for me, Harper is a Canadian embarrassment. I don't know where to start with this guy. Probably with his most recent actions. This past week on New Year's Eve, which is a classic Republican strategy, put bad news out on a Friday, or in this case, going into a long weekend. For the second time in 2 years, he's proroguing Parliament, which means he's basically putting off Parliament getting back to business for an extra month and a couple of days. So instead of going back to work on January 25th, the members of Parliament will go back over a month later on March 3rd. And the last time he did this, it was to keep in power. There was a coalition getting together. The Liberals had joined the NDP, and they were all geared towards taking away his power because he had been abusing it for many years. This time, it's to avoid being held accountable. There's a lot of questions being raised about Canada's complicity in turning captives over to the Afghans, and the captives have ended up being tortured. So that's the fact. But the question that remains is how much did Canadian authorities know about these tortures before they happened? Did they know that handing these detainees over, they would be tortured, or were they oblivious to it? And a whistleblower stepped forward, and right away, the Harper team were on it as, "Oh, he's a traitor. He can't be trusted." And there's also people who will say, "Well, the soldiers are doing the best job. You know, we can't worry about these things." That's not the Canada I know. Canada's always been seen as a fair, basically in a world full of crazy countries, along with some of the, you know, your Switzerland's, your Sweden's, and those type of countries, Canada's often seen as the level-headed country, the peaceful, the peacemakers, the country that does things right. And torture is not right, and no one's blaming the soldiers. I think the blame mostly is going to the higher-ups. But regardless of how you feel about whether this did or didn't happen, Harper, when the questions were raised, instead of supporting a committee that's investigating the claims, he decides, well, you know what? There's a lot of criticism. I'm going to shut down the parliament for an extra month and a bit so that he doesn't have to be held accountable. And to this date, until he went to the step of proroguing, his policy was to attack the messenger, Richard Colvin, and made such statements as you know, whoever supports an investigation is supporting the Taliban, or you don't support the troops. That's that is George W. Bush League bullshit. That is total and utter bullshit. I support the troops. I feel terrible. You know, when I see the headlines or on the television, you hear of the troops being hurt. Ideally, we would bring them home, but I also support an investigation into this because Canada doesn't torture. We are not a nation of torturers. And so instead of supporting an investigation or looking into this, he basically prorogues so that while the parliament is prorogued, there's a committee that's investigating the torture claims. Well, because parliament is prorogued, that committee will be dissolved. So basically Stephen Harper doesn't have to face any kind of opposition or criticism, and he can just kind of hope that the Olympics being held in Canada will take people's attention away from the fact that he is acting like a total and utter dictator. Hopefully, and I'm starting to see it a little bit grassroots-wise on Facebook and in newspaper editorials, hopefully he is taken to task. Hopefully he can't show his face in public without people questioning him or booing him or trying to hold him accountable. It's absolutely ridiculous. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is just one thing in his long litany of bad governing for the Harper and the Conservatives. When he returns from this prorogue, he's set to appoint five new cronies. So five guys he's very friendly with. He's going to appoint them as senators. And this from a guy who vowed to, quote, never appoint an unelected senator. He always felt that that was cronyism, and he was bringing in reform to the government. And I won't stand for that kind of attitude where we bring in our friends. This is going to be reform. And the list goes on and on. He's also a lot like George W. Bush in the fact that he tries to keep the media at bay and is very kind of evasive when it comes to facing interviewers or the media. He always tries to avoid them. And he also vowed to reform elections in Canada by having a fixed election date. So in the past, prime ministers could call an election on a whim. at any kind of time they like. There didn't have to be, you know, every four years there wasn't a set election. It was, well, if 2 years go by and I'm doing quite well, I'll call an election so that I can stay in. He vowed to reform that. He said, we're going to have fixed election dates. And he broke that rule as well in the last election. And he'll likely do it again later this year by calling another election. And people were calling him out on it. There were people who were trying to sue and trying to get the elections people involved with at the very least calling it for what it is, breaking his own rules. Back in 06, he violated election funding rules. And in order to avoid being accountable for that type of thing, it was basically funding rules that he broke, he quickly stepped down for an election and dissolved the ethics committee that was investigating because he was shut down Parliament then. The list goes on and on, and it's really, really frustrating because I don't think Canadians are as passionate about it. I think Canadians were more passionate about the ills of George W. Bush when he was in power than they are, in fact, with our own miniature George W. Bush in power. It seems there's a certain amount of complacency. I don't know if it's because of the economy. We haven't been hit as hard as the U.S., so maybe people are like, well, don't want to rock the boat. I think we're doing okay economically. But, yeah. And another thing that the Conservatives did this year is in a liberal riding, they used a loophole where a conservative in an adjacent riding can distribute flyers in a different riding than their own. They distributed literature basically accusing the liberals of being anti-Semitic, which is just dirty politics all around. What are some of the other things here? there's a long litany of errors. He's an environmental embarrassment. I think going into Copenhagen, Canada was kind of the country that a lot of people looked at and laughed at, and even the Yes Men, corporate pranksters, took Canada to task on their lack of movement on the environment. Stephen Harper's a bit of a follower when it comes to that. I don't think he was planning to attend Copenhagen until he saw that, well, Obama's attending. I guess I need to. But I can understand to a certain degree why he's in bed with big oil and doesn't want to cut down on greenhouse gases. His biggest supporters, the hotbed of his support, no matter how much bad stuff he does, people in Alberta don't like the word liberal. And it goes way back. But there's a lot of people who live there now who have no idea about the history of why. It's just like, oh, I can't vote liberal. We vote conservative here. It's just kind of this blind following. And you look at it at a provincial level, Ed Stelmach, an incredible failure. Just lies on top of lies. And when I was out there, they had an election, and he wasn't as widely supported in the past, but he definitely got back in with a big majority. No matter how much ill you do, as long as you're conservative, you will get voted in by Albertans. And that's not to say that every Albertan supports conservatives, but as the election results will tell you, the majority do. It's kind of scary. His government has obviously given tax breaks to big oil, but not just given them tax breaks, given the oil industry $8 million in different grants. And I get frustrated because I've always been proud to be a Canadian, and I think everyone has. Even people want to emulate Canada when they go overseas. They put the Canadian flag on their knapsacks, and Americans have been known to do that because their country was so reviled around the world for so long, especially during the Bush era, that they would put a Canadian flag and claim to be Canadian when they traveled abroad because Canadians were seen as this enviable nation where you know, we were socially aware, we were progressive, socially liberal. You know, we were a country that was on the right track. We were setting an example for progressiveness and progressive politics. But that's all changed with Harper. You know, before he came along, we were on the way to decriminalizing marijuana. I'm not a drug. I'm not into the pot or the Mary Jane or the. That's not my thing. I'm not a drug guy. I barely drink alcohol. You know, wine with dinner once in a while, maybe once a year, a good old binge drinking. But you look at now what's happening in the States. There's places like California where, as a state, they've decided that, well, we're going to have medical marijuana, and it's basically a loophole because anyone can go and go to the one of the marijuana shops in California. They have their own on-site doctors, and you say, I'm a little anxious, or yeah, I'm nervous, or whatever. They'll write you a prescription for pot, and the stores have all kinds of different varieties and different labels. It's basically an industry now, and it's taxed. The government makes money on it, and it's progressive. Gay marriage, Canada's being seen as very progressive in that nature, and I think Stephen Harper has tried to push against that, but it's gone through the other way. He's deported Mark Emery to the U.S. To face pot charges. Was trying to privatize healthcare. Of all the industrialized nations that have country funded, have basically government funded health systems. No one has decided, yeah, we want to go back. People look at the U.S. and what a mess it is in that 30 million people in the U.S. have no health care. And if they get sick, well, sorry. If they die, well, you know, they can't afford health care. Why would you go back? It really baffles me. But I guess he's trying to follow the U.S., even though the U.S. is trying to come around and privatize things. His government also implemented mandatory drug sentences and pushed through a bill criminalizing drug use. There's the whole Mayor Arar scandal where Arar was sent off to Syria where he was tortured, and the Harper government took a hands-off approach. And as it turned out, he had no terror connections, and there was no problem. And now he's suing the government, as he should, because he was mistreating the government, bungled it in a big way. I love Canada. I'm so proud of this country. When I go on vacations and on trips, I can't stop talking about, oh, Canada this, Canada that. I'll wear the Canada hat, and there's just such an amount of pride, and I think that's why I get so irritated with how things have taken a turn. I mean, it's really, really frustrating. I was through the early Bush years. I was like, oh, thank God Canada's not like that. Thank God we don't have a Bush. And now we have a guy, a residual of the Bush-type thinking, who's doing Bush-type things. And I guess I can only hope that Canada wises up and we toss this guy on his ass, because he is not my prime minister. He is he's doing it here. We have to get rid of this bumbling, sweater-wearing, zombie-eyed doofus. And I should say that I'm not a rah-rah Ignatieff is the answer here. I have my qualms with Ignatieff. He's not the most charismatic guy. He's kind of an oddball. He doesn't really have – he seems to be uncomfortable – in public settings. He's definitely he's a scholar, and he certainly knows politics, but he just seems like a bit of an oddball. Given the circumstances, I think at this point, anything is better than Harper. And that's my new chant, anyone but Harper. Instead of Canada, anyone but Harper. And there we go. That's my political rant. All right. And now, some ha-has.
Oh, what was I talking about? Oh, this prick that climbed into the polar bear cage and got eaten in 45 seconds. Now I laugh, but look it. Now I know where I am. I'm in San Jose, and I'm not trying to be racist, but look it. He did have a Latino name. And they said he had been harassing the polar bear. Like, there was this guy showing up outside the polar bear cage like,
Hello, polar bear. I see a polar bear. You think you're so much better than everybody else. Oh, I'm a polar bear. You ain't shit, polar bear. You're You think you're so much better than everyone else because you're on the Coca-Cola commercial? I'll fuck you up, bitch. I'll fuck you up. You're not a polar bear, you know, you're a punta bear. That's what you are. You're a punta bear.
So this crazy fucker is harassing a bear. How do you harass a bear? Unlike the bear is on the other side of the glass going, that fucking guy comes back one more time. I am miffed. I am miffed. M-I-F-F-E-D, miffed. And then he climbed up.
It's go time. It's go time. It's go time, bitch. Come on, fucker. You take off that white coat, I'm gonna fuck it up too. I'll fuck up that white coat, bitch.
Climbed over the wall, 45 seconds. Blah, 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 blah.
That is a comedy from Bobcat Goldthwait, who I think is unfairly tarnished by his pre. I think what it did him in was the Police Academy movies. I guess as an early stand-up, but he's actually quite a funny comedian and quite opinionated, and has become now a film director and father of the year. Is a very dark comedy, but a very good film. You may want to check that out. It is the Josh Holiday Podcast. Hello. Just a reminder, if you want more information on the show, if you want to leave a comment or you want to get involved, maybe do an interview, whatever the case may be, the best place to go is joshholidayshow.com. Josh Holiday, not an A, an O. Excuse me, I just burped. .com. And you can check everything out there. You can find old episodes and that type of thing. And there's also a link to iTunes. That's a new pirate service. The iTunes, where we break songs down into tones, and then they're peer to peer shared, and then your computer reassembles the tones into songs. No, iTunes is the program where you can now find the Josh Holiday Show podcast, and that's what it's called on there, and it's marked explicit. So if you have kids or you make sure, parents, that you supervise your kids if they are to listen to the show so you can explain the finer details of what was said to said kids, whatever that means. All right, let's talk about Bob Cole. For a long time, Bob Cole was the lead play-by-play guy on the CBC. He called it, throughout the 90s and the 2000s, he called a ton of Leafs games. Every Saturday night, basically, it was Bob Cole along with Harry Neal. He would call the Leafs games, and he's been at the CBC, and he's been calling hockey games for God knows how many years. Decades and decades. And in his day, very, very exciting, and I think, you know, he fit it sort of the style of hockey that was done then. But since that time, hockey and hockey commentary has evolved. It's more detailed, it's more insightful, and at the same time as that's happening, Bob Cole also losing his game a little bit, not being able to keep track of the play as well. Making mistakes on player names, team names, you know, rather than saying, Luke Shen clears the puck out of the zone, he'll often use just the team name. And the Leafs clear the puck out of the zone. Boston takes the puck. This is a very non-specificness to it. And then oftentimes he'll say, I was watching a game where the Leafs are playing and Hal Gill was playing against them, and he referred to him a couple of times as Todd Gill. Todd Gill played for the Leafs in the early 90s, and I think he stopped playing for the Leafs in the early 90s. So 15 years later, he's identifying a player by Todd Gill's name, and he also states the obvious. I think recently there was a tie game. It was the third period, and he said, "You know the next goal is very, very important." And he'll do that all the time. You know these, in a playoff game, you know these Toronto Maple Leafs would love to win this game. And I have nothing against the man. He seems like a charming, gentle man and well-liked and revered in the hockey and broadcasting community. But I can't understand why he's still there. And I don't know if it's a reluctance by CBC management to say, Bob, maybe we can use him in a different capacity, maybe as, you know, a third guy in the booth to lend some insight about the past or that type of thing. There's precedent for it. You look at Montreal. They've kept some of the old broadcasters around to lend their insight. But in this case, I don't know. You look at athletes, in particular hockey players, a lot of them have this idea that I will retire at the top of my game. You know, once I've sort of hit my peak, there's no sense sticking around being half the player I used to be. And it's kind of disappointing that Bob Cole didn't, you know, pick a year, any time in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. He's been headed downhill in his abilities to call a game, not as a person. I just wish that at some point he'd said, made an announcement, he can make a big deal about it because he is a great, great hockey broadcaster from the past, and he will be revered, he will be remembered. And I think at the beginning of a season, if he said, this is going to be my last year calling games, then everything falls into place. We have a year to sort of absorb the fact that he's leaving, and I'm sure there would be tributes from players and fans, and it would be a great sort of farewell to one of the hockey broadcasters that we've grown up with. But the way it is now, it seems like, I can't imagine that he'd be calling games even next year, but I guess maybe for the new year, he still has time to say, all right, this is my, you know, the second half of the NHL season. This is I'm going to hang up the microphone cords. I don't know what you say. Players hang up the skates. I'm going to hang up the headphones with the mic on them. I'm going to hang up the sports blazer. Whatever the case may be. It would be sad if someone else made the decision for him, said, "Yeah, Bob, you know what? You're not there anymore," or took him out of the thing. And I can imagine for the management at CBC, there's probably that dilemma where, you know, they kind of know that his abilities have gone downhill, and there are much, much more talented people there to call the game. And that's why I think he doesn't call the majority of the primetime games. They give them to, drawing blanks. Chris Cuthbert gets a lot of the games, and it's going to drive me crazy. The great goal! The guy who used to say, now that's hockey! You know who I'm talking about if you know hockey. All right. Enough said for that. All right. So, yeah, and I just don't know what's going to happen. And I really wish that he would say, you know, that's it. I'm going to retire at the end of the year. You know, thanks for everything. But we will wait and see. That's my Bob Cole thought. While we are on the topic of hockey, I will talk about the Maple Leafs. And I've talked about them in the past. Because I'm a fan, I have the disease. Sometimes it goes into remission and the Leafs are doing well. Sometimes they're bad, but the disease is always there. I can't stop being a fan, no matter how terrible they play. And I was at the beginning of the year, I thought it was great. Brian Burke's coming in. He's making some changes. He wants to make the team tougher, grittier, which is my kind of team. I like the fights, the hockey fights. I like the hard hitting. I like people who are passionate and finish their checks. Just watching the junior hockey this week, the junior World Junior Championships, it's really nice to see pretty much every player finish their check and finish it hard on every shift. It's a bit of a change from the NHL on some days. And so I was excited about that. And I was all prepared to lose more games than we won, because we're in a rebuilding process. And I had accepted that. And I thought, you know what? As long as I'm watching an entertaining game, lots of hits and maybe some fights and maybe a young team that tries their best and not these, you know, veterans who are slacking, then I'm okay with that, because if we finish low, we'll get a really, really good first-round pick. And you look at the teams that have been successful of late, your Pittsburgh Penguins, your Washington Capitals, and now the Islanders are starting to pick up steam. In the past, you look at teams like Tampa Bay with Vinny Lecavalier, St. Louis, or St. Louis, I should say. These are teams that had a few bad years and had very high draft picks, often number one draft picks, and they have built around those picks. The Leafs, on the other hand, for the past couple of years, have had this in-between thing where they were just good enough to either make the playoffs or just good enough not to make the playoffs. So the team didn't make any trades at the deadline to try and get younger talent because they thought, oh, we might have a chance. So the Leafs would end up getting picks right in the middle, like your fifth in the first round around the 15th mark, where talent isn't as sure. There's not as much of a surety of those players being impact players in the NHL. So this year, the past season, Leafs finished, had a pretty poor finish. They were seventh last. So they had the seventh pick. They tried to move up, but the seventh pick, which is not bad in the first round. We got Kadri, who seems like a pretty decent prospect. He's playing quite well and looks to have a bright future. And that was great. And I thought, well, he's not really the centerpiece of a team going forward. And so I was of the mind that, yeah, that's fine. This year we might tank, we might do bad, and we might get another, you know, fifth to seventh round pick. But the way the team was playing early on, it looked like we would finish dead last and maybe get a crack at the number one pick. At this point, it looks like Taylor Hall is the top candidate for that pick. So it looked like, all right, this is all right. We're in rebuilding. As long as the games are entertaining, the fans will be understanding. But here's where the hitch comes in. Brian Burke decides to make a trade. He could have put an offer sheet out for Phil Kessel. Phil Kessel wasn't fitting in Boston, and there were issues, and he was unsatisfied. He wanted to get out, and Brian Burke could have put forth an offer sheet. I believe it was a first, a second, and a third round pick. But rather than that, he actually made a deal with Boston that he would give two first round picks. So a first round this year, first round next year, and a second round in the year following. So that's a lot of high picks to be giving away. And Kessel, he's had a good season or two, but he's had some injury troubles, and there's sort of rumors about him being an unsettling presence in the dressing room and a bit streaky. So when he came to Toronto, there was a lot of skepticism. I was skeptical, but then the first bunch of games when Kessel came, he was sort of on fire and he was playing quite well, and that was great. And I was like, oh, you know what? Maybe we skipped the whole development phase, and Kessel was a first round pick, and he's still pretty young, and we've got him for quite a number of years. So it's not all bad. It's like getting a first round pick who's all ready to play. But lately, I think we're seeing more of the true Kessel as a player, and it's not a nice thing. I like goal scorers. I like people with offense, but Phil Kessel is incredibly soft. Like every game I've been watching, he won't finish checks. He never wins a puck battle. He'll go in with another opposition player, and he'll always come away without the puck. He'll turn away from checks. He'll avoid being checked to make the play. And his latest thing is he'll come in over the blue line and stop right away, looking to get a pass or put it deep. And almost every time he's done it, he's been stripped of the puck, and it often ends up in a chance going the opposite way because he stopped just inside the opposition blue line. And they've also put him on the power play. And before Kessel came, Toronto was doing okay on the power play. they're a bit hot and cold, but they were doing okay. They were actually ranked, you know, in the, I think they were ranked number one for at least a day or two. And Kessel came along, and right away they put him on the power play, and everyone tried to focus on getting him the puck and getting him to quarterback things. So if someone had a shooting opportunity, rather than shooting, they'd send it back to Kessel. And I just don't – he just doesn't seem to have the vision or the quarterbacking ability that the Leafs have put on him. He sort of, you know, stays along the sideboards and tries to get out at the points and oftentimes makes high-risk passes that get picked off by the opposition. And they keep putting him out on the power play despite the fact that even the coaches acknowledge that, well, ever since Phil Kessel's been on the power play, we've suffered because everyone wants to get on the puck. Well, I don't think you can blame the other players. I think you need to just change the situation. Maybe take Phil Kessel off the power play. Put him on the second unit or take him off the power play for a while. But it doesn't seem like something that the Leafs coach or management are willing to do. Now, here's where the frustration comes. The Leafs started out the season. I can talk. The Leafs started out the season. Here's how it went. In the preseason, the Leafs were destined for the Stanley Cup. They played really, really well in the preseason, but preseason is not really an indicator of your true team. And so what happened is they came out of the gate and had a miserable, miserable start. For most of the first part of the season, they were tied for or in second place for last place. And then they went through a period where they were on the roll. And they at one point, they were 3 points out of eighth place. So 8 points, or not 8 points, 3 points out of eighth place in the playoff race. So they were out of a playoff spot by 3 points. So everyone was rah-rah, and this was when Phil Kessel came on the team, and he did show he had some offense. Now it seems like teams are wise to how he works and how the team works, and they check him hard, and they put a focus on him, and that's what happens. He's quite a bit less effective, and he seems a little bit more disinterested now as well. So the Leafs are falling back down again. They've had a horrible stretch, and it looks like they probably won't make the playoffs. I mean, for a while there, it was like, oh, they might, but they can't afford another bad stretch of hockey. It means they're out of the playoffs. And that's what's happening now, which going into the season, you think, well, that's not a bad thing. You know, maybe we'll get a lottery pick. We could get the first, second, or third picks that generally turn into NHL prospects and often end up playing in their draft year for the NHL. But that's not going to happen. The problem is we gave away our first pick in the 2010 draft in order to get Kessel. So if we finished last, had we not made this Kessel trade, we would have had someone to build a franchise around and a star in the making. And have you seen Taylor Hall play? Right now projected to be number one, and he is an amazing player. And Kessel, I don't know. There's a lot of his play that I don't like. He's just seems so fragile. He avoids checks. It's just a frustrating player to watch. I think, if anything, the Leafs need a power forward, someone who will not play on the outside, who will go straight to the net, not go just over the blue line and try and find someone to dish the puck off to, someone who won't try to shoot from the corner board, someone who actually will make a drive to the net. And you see that when people do that, when players do drive the net, there's a reward to it. Jason Blake, of late, instead of circling around the outside like he used to do, he's been driving the net a little bit more, taking some punishment in the process, but getting some points, getting some goals in the process as well. And once in a while, Ponikarovsky will stand in front of the goalie and screen him. And being in that area often causes goals. You're screening the goalie. And just generally in hockey, I can't understand why more people don't emulate Holmstrom in Detroit. He has made a career, and a great career, out of scoring goals from 2 feet out. He gets in the goalie's face. He stands there. He absorbs punishment. He draws penalties. He screens the goalie. He picks up rebounds from shots that the goalie can't see. And yet he's one of the only guys known for that skill in the NHL. It takes a lot of punishment, but if you can get one guy who can stand between the goalie and the shooter and cause a screen, you're going to get more goals. And it's frustrating to see that no one does it. I remember Dino Cicerelli, he made a career of it. And then there's a few other. Dave Andrechuk, who used to play for the Leafs, he was good at getting in front of the goalie and causing trouble. And the Leafs, though, for the most part, they are lacking that grit. So even as they're losing, they're not that entertaining. They have Jamal Myers and Colton Orr and Wayne Primeau as sort of their grit guys. But beyond that, there's a lot of softness on the team. A lot of guys who would rather just sort of play to the outside, go down the sideboards, or maybe pass across the middle. No one just going in front, causing havoc, causing the other team to get irritated. One of the demonstrations of that, I thought, was in their games against Boston, where they came out on the bad end pretty much every time because they gave Chara a free ride. Chara is a great defenseman, and I only wish that the Leafs had got him instead of Hal Gill when they had the opportunity, when both were free agents. And instead of trying to get in Chara's face and make him take penalties and get him angry, get him off his game, they left him alone. I would see every single Leaf turn away from checking Chara, turn away from getting in his face. He's a guy who you can take off his game. I've seen games where he gets angry and he gets frustrated and doesn't really pay attention to the net so much as you know, getting mad. You can take him off his game. And goalies as well, you can take off their game, getting in their face, blocking them. You look at the Outdoor Classic that was played recently. A really, really great game, great for the NHL. Almost a whole other podcast for that one. But you look at that game, and you look at Tim Thomas, Vezina winner. He was bumped by Scott Hartnell. Hartnell should have got a penalty, but whatever. He bumped the goalie. The goalie was off his game. And then the next time Hartnell came to the net, Tim Thomas went out about 3 feet to cross-check Scott Hartnell and his hair. And as he was cross-checking him, the other team scored. So if you get in goalies' heads, you've seen it with Hasek in the old days. People would always try and get in his nerves, and he would race out of the crease, and it would take him off his game. The Leafs need more guys who will go to that area. Go to where the goalie is. Battle in the defensive areas. We need some people who, with scoring skills, who don't mind roughing it up a little bit, who will drive to the net. Phil Kessel is not the answer. He is a softy. He is fragile. He's a China doll. And I think it's going to turn out to be a mistake that we made such a sacrifice in draft picks to get this player. You know, the talk now is, all right, we got Kessel. How do we build around him? I don't see that guy as a building block. I don't. We need more guys, more hardworking guys, one of my favorite Leafs now, and for the last few years, has been Ian White. Here's a guy who's sacrificed, works hard every game, is kind of a quiet, calm presence, and in one of my early podcasts suggested that he wouldn't be a bad choice for captain because he embodies what a Leaf should be, a calm, sort of quiet, assertive leader who does the job every night, works hard. He's been through challenges. The beginning of the season seemed to be a hard time where they don't put the confidence in him and he has to fight his way back onto the team. But now he's one of the top two defenders and one of the shutdown guys for the Leafs. And every time the media is around, he's one of the guys who will step up and speak every time. He really, really should be given consideration for captain because he's unrestricted free agent come the summer as well. So the Leafs should, I think, hurry up and try and sign him because he's the one gem that has come out of their system. But I guess it's a wait and see thing. I mean, the Olympics are here, and then the early trade deadline comes, and I can't imagine that Brian Burke will do what past Leaf regimes have done and hold out hope that we're going to do okay because we're close to the playoffs. We'll stick with what we got. I think he'll make changes in a big way, and I really hope he does. And I'm really disappointed in the Kessel thing, but maybe Burke will turn things around at the deadline, and maybe he'll try and get some picks for next year. But who knows? It's the Josh Holiday Show podcast. You can get us on iTunes. Visit the website joshholidayshow.com and more next week. Thank you very much for listening, and please spread the word about the podcast. The more subscribers we get in the iTunes, the better, and I appreciate it all. Thanks a lot. Have a good week.